Political talk for the rest of us. This is Stand Up with Pete Dominic. From the POTUS Studios in New York, this is Pete Dominic.
All right, we are back here. Thank you very much for joining us on Stand Up. The Economic Policy Institute, or EPI, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank created in 1986 to broaden discussions about economic policy to include the needs of low and middle income workers. EPI believes every working person deserves a good job with fair pay, affordable health care, and retirement security. How dare they? And to achieve this goal, EPI conducts research and analysis on the economic status of working America. Joining us now is the vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, where he specializes in labor and employment law, occupational safety, health and pension policy. And last night, he joined Stephen Colbert on the Colbert Report. Russ Eisenbray, welcome to the discussion. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
How did it go last night?
Well, you know, it's always sort of weird and scary, I think, for anyone on the Colbert Report, but ultimately it was fun.
Yeah, I work over there, and I was trying to get to introduce myself to you because I knew you were coming on today, but I didn't get the chance, and I didn't want to bother you. But I thought you did a great job. It's tough. It's tough keeping up with Colbert, and he's talking over you and saying insane things, and you're trying to make a good point. But I thought you did a good job.
Well, thank you. He is very quick, very clever, and he comes out of right field suddenly with something you just can't anticipate.
Yeah, you got to hang in there with a guy like him and try to stay in the conversation. But you guys were talking about a very interesting issue, which you believe strongly about, which is that interns, students doing internships, should get paid. Explain your stance on this and why you think it.
Well, there are actually two different situations. In fact, it's more complicated than that. But let's just start with internships that are legally not paid, and there's a test for that. The Department of Labor has a test that says if it's really an educational experience, it's not for the employer's financial benefit, if there's not a job offer promised at the end of it, if you're not replacing, the intern isn't replacing a regular employee, and a couple of other things, you know, that require that there be close supervision and that it be like a vocational education program, then it's a true internship. It's not employment. It doesn't have to be paid. But the internships that most interns get, where they go and they are just thrown into work, they're working on somebody's website, they're answering phones, they're getting people coffee, they're doing stuff that used to be paid for. It's employment. It's not education. Then those people need to be paid, and in fact, the law requires that they be paid.
By that definition, our interns should be paid at SiriusXM. I do buy them lunch whenever possible, which is not often.
probably doesn't amount to the minimum wage, though, right?
Well, maybe for 1 hour one day. Uh-huh. But certainly not for an entire day, much less a week or an internship. But listen, we are in Midtown. I don't mean to make light of it. It's an interesting subject. But how would a company? I saw this last night, and I want to disagree with you, but I know I can't because you'll bury me on this argument. But all I looked at it and said, well, if you're a student and you're going to college and you're getting an education, this is part of it. You pay for that. And they're getting an education working, for example, my interns are on this program every day. But you know what? This company pays people to answer phones, and our interns answer phones. I mean, so I think it's a perfect example of what you're talking about.
Right.
But,
it's displacing,
but isn't it just on the job?
Who needs a job? Somebody else who actually, you know, needs a job isn't getting it because you are employing somebody without paying them.
But isn't it also on-the-job training for college?
I had jobs in college. In the old days, you did that and you got paid. You got the experience and you got paid for it.
I prefer to blame the intern than pay the intern, but I actually think I agree with you. How do we really change that, Ross, in this situation? I mean, we have a situation in this country right now where companies, to make maximum profits, are laying off people and having the remaining people do the job of two or three people. I mean, we've seen that because of the economic crisis, the downturn, the recession, whatever you want to people call it. People had to be let go. Company couldn't maintain keeping these people on, but the people that stay on have to do their work. And then company starts making more money. They don't necessarily hire these people back, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, some of these, you know, ABC has had layoffs, and I'm sure, you know, there are hundreds of interns working at ABC right now who are unpaid, and ABC is now making a big profit, and all the while, of course, it's been paying its corporate executives millions of dollars. You know, so, you know, could it afford, could these, especially a large corporation, can it afford to pay $7.25 an hour, or in New York, I think it's the minimum wage is $8 an hour to people who are doing work that, you know, is real work? I think yes. The answer is yes. And so what can we do about it? We can get the government to enforce the law, and they will. If people complain, if an intern says, you know, really, I'm being exploited here, suddenly wakes up one day and says, I'm being exploited, and goes to the Labor Department, files a complaint, they will enforce the law.
When you talk about, you hear this argument a lot, that the one that you just laid out with ABC, that the corporate executives, they laid off a whole bunch of people, the corporate executives are making huge, huge profits. Isn't it the job of a for-profit company to make as much money as they can? If they can get away with paying their executives a lot of money and paying their shareholders, and I mean, isn't that what capitalism is? Isn't that
well? But we have restraints on capital so that it doesn't run amok and you know, crush the little person. You know, we have a law that says if you work for somebody and it's for their financial benefit, you have to be paid. They don't have the company actually doesn't have an option here. It is illegal for them to.
Oh, yeah.
Have people working.
And, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm saying in the case where they're not replacing people with interns or indentured servants, if you will, they're not hiring those people. You talked about ABC laying people off. You're saying that the laid off people in this case are replaced by interns and unpaid people, and those paid salaried workers should be brought back, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm just picking ABC as a, you know, for example.
There's plenty
of
companies you can name.
Just call it X Corporation that's done this.
All right. Because ABC, you should actually probably say Disney too, right? You're saying any X company, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That has done this. If, you know, if they've replaced people who used to do these jobs with interns, then, you know, that's just wrong. And it's bad for the economy.
How's it bad for the economy? I want to hear.
Okay, so I just got a letter from somebody who was defending this, a guy who said that he worked for a full year, full time, and wasn't paid. And he's not unhappy with the experience. He runs his own business, and he said his bargain was the American way. And I looked at this, and I said to myself, well, how did you do this? How did you live for a year, saving the company, he said, $25,000, which is what they would have had to pay for his work? He has rich parents, or, you know, someone was taking care of him. Everyone doesn't have that option. Somebody else who actually needs a $25,000 a year job to support a family or just to support himself didn't get the job.
You know,
because the company given that option took the free labor. You know, that is a bad thing for the labor market. It's a bad thing for working people generally. It drags down wages for everybody.
What about the idea now? My intern just instant messaged me, and he said, "What is our guest Ross' thoughts on the idea that not only do you not get paid for an internship, but you are actually required to get college credit, so it actually costs the intern money to work for free?"
Well, that's true. I've written about this elsewhere, that interns are getting screwed, two ways in a lot of these situations. There are people who, you know, they've gone through college and they're looking for their first job, and they're told that the only way into journalism or, you know, communications or the fashion industry is to work for free. That's a very serious and a different problem from what the schools are doing, which is sending out their students, making them pay for college credits. You know, they're paying tuition, but they're not in a class. They're outsourced to, you know, some employer. So they're paying tuition, and they're not getting paid for work that they're doing. They're financially, they're getting it from both ends.
You guys at EPI, at your website, epi.org, have a graphic about the high unemployment about among young workers. I want to stay on young people here for a minute because young people are still very highly unemployed. We're talking about college internships, but forget about college internships. You graduate from college with a degree, you are unemployed so often. It's good that the Affordable Care Act now will help you stay on your parents' health insurance up until age 27. I think that's a fantastic part of the Affordable Care Act. It's really helpful.
I agree.
And those are generally very healthy people, so it doesn't cost the insurance company that much money, which is partially why they're willing to do it. But, Russ, what are young people supposed to do? What are the numbers, and what is it like getting out of college today?
It's been a very bad few years since the recession, obviously. I mean, hiring overall has been very slow in the economy. It's starting to pick up now, but it's true that these have been, you know, three or four of the worst years that anyone could have graduated from college into in a generation. Unemployment right now is 16% for people 16 to 24 years old.
I wanted to ask you today about job quality. We see these jobs, we see the economy rebounding, a lot of different metrics, obviously the Dow, whatever that means. I don't think it means a lot for lower and middle-income people who you guys advocate for at
right.
EPI. But you know, when we see these job numbers come out last month, very surprisingly high, made a lot of people happy. But what about job quality? What about there's a study on Mitt Romney's job creation, and a lot of his job creation is in places like I don't know, Staples and Home Depot. I think it was Sports Authority, and $9 an hour jobs. These are not jobs that you can support a family on. And I'm not trying to single out Romney or Obama. I'm just saying, in this economy, yeah, jobs are coming back, but what is the quality of the job? What is the pay of the jobs? Are these Mick jobs, as they say? What have you learned at EPI?
Well, job quality is certainly less than it used to be. I mean, just overall in the economy, the percentage of jobs that come with health care, you know, employer-paid health care,
right,
is down 10%, 10 percentage points from a decade ago. I mean, it really is,
wow,
you know, a substantial difference. And pension coverage is disappearing. Employers are now providing, some provide 401ks, but only about half of the workforce has a job that has even a 401k, and there, you know, the employer might only match what you put in. So if your wages are low and you can't put in much, you effectively don't even have a pension. So yeah, job quality has deteriorated, and it's not picking up right now. Looking ahead, unfortunately, you know, we talk about high tech is the future, green jobs, and the growth jobs in the economy are really jobs in retail, cashiers, you know, janitorial, healthcare jobs that are at the low end. Most jobs that we're going to see in the economy are not jobs that are high skill, college education required jobs. So if we don't make sure that people, you know, in the bottom half are getting a decent salary, if we don't have a way to either encourage or force employers to provide better pay and benefits, you know, the vast majority of people are going to be struggling as they have been.
Russ Eisenbray is our guest. He is the vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, where he specializes in labor and employment law, occupational safety, health, and pension policy. Ross, both Republican candidates, all the Republican candidates, and the president make a similar argument about the future of America. And they say, you know, we're all worried that our kids are not going to have it as well as we did. Some people define the American dream as each generation doing better, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
But What is, you know, this is a question that would, I think, we could have a lot of people talk and debate and for hours over, but what is the government's role in trying to help improve from generation to generation economic mobility? Because folks on the right certainly argue the free market will do that. If you just get government out of the way, regulations and politicians out of the way, each generation will do better. I would imagine you disagree with that. And if so, why? What should the government's role be in helping each generation do better? And maybe we could just specifically say, what should they be doing right now? Because clearly that's not happening for my kids. Maybe for my kids, I'm doing pretty well, and I'm privileged, and I can put them through college most likely if things continue to go well, but not for a lot of Americans.
The biggest improvement that we ever saw in America in living standards for the great majority of people came after the Great Depression, during World War II, after World War II, for the 25 years after World War II. And the things that characterized the economy then were, most importantly, I think, strong unions, which is something, you know, that we've lost. People, Republicans, right-wingers, complain about big labor. Well, big labor is, you know, has shrunk to a quarter of the size that it used to be. And it just doesn't carry the weight, you know, and strength and bargaining power for workers that it used to. So government could do a lot. It's actually various laws, the Taft-Hartley Act and dozens and dozens of court decisions that have made it harder and harder for workers to organize, for workers to bargain successfully, to strike successfully, you know, to basically to win better wages. So the government could do a lot to turn that around. Manufacturing was a bigger part of our economy then, and it's a big part of other economies. It's not like there's some rule that says manufacturing, you know, we're the future is a future without manufacturing. We're always going to have things, you know, everything from books to computers to furniture, you know, cars. They have to be built somewhere, and those can be and should be good jobs, and they should be in the United States, and millions of people would have a better future if we had a bigger manufacturing sector, if we brought jobs back from overseas and built things here that we used to build here. And government policy has a lot to do with that. How we deal with foreign currency manipulation and our tax code, does it encourage businesses to move offshore and manufacture, or does it incentivize them to stay in the United States? Those are important things that will make a difference for our future.
All right, let's take a. You got time for a couple calls, Ross?
Absolutely.
Ross Eisenbray joins us, Vice President, Economic Policy Institute, EPI.org, and he was on the Colbert Report last night. Go watch it, everybody. It was great. Jacob, Kansas, you're on, Jacob.
Yeah, Pete, fantastic show. Probably the best product in the history of all media.
Very kind. Very kind.
I think Ross's point is so important because it affects jobs and it affects education. Today, I'm a veteran, and like internships in the federal government are an issue for veterans too, because a lot of these low-level jobs, they have interns doing them, and then those interns just move into the next position. But what it does is it creates credential inflation, because you have all these jobs that now require bachelors that didn't used to require bachelors, and two, you have no on-the-job training. Companies do not want to pay you to get trained on the job. You know, you hear about, I saw just the other day, news article, the manufacturer's talking about, we can't find workers. Well, you could if you would just pay them for a year a slightly lower salary and train them. I think that's how it used to work, but that idea is just gone, and that really hurts us as a country, I think, a lot.
Ross?
Yeah, I love what he just said. The minimum wage, for example, you know, is the entry-level wage. I mean, that's what it's meant to be, the rock-bottom minimum wage. And two-thirds of Americans think that it ought to be $10 an hour. It's, you know, currently it's $7 and a quarter an hour. But businesses could hire people at $10 an hour and train them and until they're more productive and, you know, they're producing $25 an hour worth of product or service. That is how it used to be.
Businesses just are not interested at all in spending any money to invest in their people. They want, you know, you just go out. I've been on the job market forever, but go out and look at requirements. It's always 2 to 3 years of experience now, even for entry-level positions, because there's all these interns that have that 2 or 3 years of experience that they got while not being paid. But for people who can't afford college, it really eliminates a huge portion of the jobs because they can never get that experience because all that experience is getting taken by juniors and seniors in college.
Hmm. This is really convincing me. Jacob, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Sean in Arizona.
Here's how jacked up all these price structure is for school, right? I went to Arizona State 10 years ago. My tuition was grand a semester. My wife just graduated from NAU, Northern Arizona, in Flagstaff, and she racked up $60K for her doctorate in just 3 years, and that's with me supporting her. And in her third year, she got the privilege of working for free and paying tuition to NAU. So we had to pay NAU money for tuition for her never setting foot on campus for an entire year, and she worked for free. And on top of all that, now we get a nice 6.5% interest rate we're paying on top of that for all the student loans,
wow.
Which is more than the mortgage on my house, more than the mortgage on the new house that I'm getting after I move. You know,
what'd she get her PhD in?
She's a physical therapist.
At least she'll make some decent money, right? I hope.
Yeah, but so far she regrets it. She said it just wasn't worth it. You know, she used to be a nursing assistant. And before she went to school, you know, we were way less in debt. You know, we didn't have this debt that you can never write off or declare bankruptcy on or anything like that that's collecting 6.5% interest. Now we're way far in debt. Yeah, she's making some money now, but we're trying to pay it off in 10 years, and that's paying double the minimum payment.
Boy.
Just to pay it off in 10 years.
What do you do?
I'm a software engineer.
Sean, great call. Ross, on his problem, anything?
Well, you know, that is exactly what I think is the worst thing about what the universities are doing, that they realize that they can save money. As he said, they're not providing anything to the caller's wife. She's off campus doing an internship somewhere and paying tuition to them. I mean, how is that right? To me, it just is an out-and-out scam.
It really is, but we just don't think of it that way because she's in school. She's, quote, in school. But it really is kind of like exactly what you're saying, a scam. Mike, Florida.
Hey, I'm sure your guest probably has some stats on this, but I'm curious. You mentioned about each generation, the expectation that they can do better than the previous generation. What's the impact of seniors hanging on to jobs, not creating vacancies for younger people to move into because of the economic situation? A lot of that happening, you know.
Yeah, there definitely
mandatory retirement ages. You know, I don't know what the solution is, but
a good question, Mike.
Yeah, people are actually staying in the workforce longer right now. Partly that's because people who were expecting to retire with a 401k and then saw it turn into a 201k in the stock market crash, you know, realize that they have to work. They're not going to make it through their retirement if they don't work longer. Retirement ages are going up, and then people are just, you know, nervous they're afraid to retire and give up a paycheck that they had. So that does affect everybody all the way back down to the entry level. I think that all of these ideas about raising the retirement age, raising the Social Security retirement age to 70, for example, only make that worse. For right now, it would probably make sense to make it easier to get Medicare earlier, to let people retire without a penalty earlier under Social Security. But, there's no appetite for that in Congress at all right now.
Economics is much more interesting than I ever thought it was. Craig in D.C., you're on with Ross Eisenbray of the Economic Policy Institute. Craig, go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Hey, Ross, great information, great topic. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Two things that I can say about what you've been talking about. I've experienced it on an internship level, and I've experienced it in the business world and the workforce as well after college, and I'd have to agree with you, and I would have to say scam on both parts. First, I'll say wonderful, wonderful experiences that you get with the responsibilities that you're given, especially internship-wise. I think the experience part of it is structured well. But for example, I'm a teacher. So I was a student teaching intern for an entire semester, which isn't too long. However, my placement, through no one's fault, was an hour away from where I lived, where I went to school. So that's extra gas costs, you know, food costs, can't eat on the campus with a meal plan, so on and so forth kind of thing. The part that's the scam about it, you're away from campus. You are forced to have, or at least in my case I was forced to be enrolled 12 credits as a full-time student, which is full tuition. So significantly greater cost than what it would be for, you know, paying per credit hour for it. So any thoughts on that before I keep going?
Well, this is an example of where an internship actually can make sense. I assume that you were teaching with another teacher in the classroom.
Yes, yes. That's the part of me saying it was a wonderful
right.
education.
So that actually
that
is structured. I don't consider that a scam, even though you had to pay tuition. I can justify that in my mind as you were actually getting the kind of training that you needed to be a successful teacher
Fair.
And that teacher could have done that job without you. The teacher, in those cases, I know a little bit about this. In those cases, you're learning more than you're assisting, taking responsibility for it. And oftentimes, towards the end of the semester, you get to teach the class, and the teacher just kind of sits there and watches you, even though the teacher could be doing that. That's your opportunity to learn and get on hands-on experience, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I assume that's not saving the school system any money. And so they're not really taking advantage of you.
It's funny. My internship.
No, this is not the school system as in who you're working for. This is college.
My internship in the summer of 1994 was at Disney World, and I got paid $5.60 an hour. I had to pay for housing.
Yep, amusement parks will do that. Yeah. I'm a tuba player, and I played for amusement parks, and you were paid, but you pay for your housing.
Yeah.
Craig. I'll be brief so you can get to other people.
Yeah, quickly. I got to wrap it up, actually.
Okay. Electronics retail giant I work for, leave it at that. Subsidized, got rid of a lot of mid-level employees, paid 40 to 50 grand a year. Those of us at the bottom were moved up. Same responsibilities. None of the extra perks, such as quarterly bonuses for the money that we make. So moved into their job roles. No extra pay, no extra bonuses, no extra nothing.
Well, how is Best Buy? Craig, thank you very much. We're out of time. I got to go. But Ross, I'm getting a whole bunch of emails and tweets saying really appreciate Ross Eisenbray. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll have to do this again. I always go to epi.org, follow you guys on Twitter. Thank you very much. We appreciate
it. I'd love
it.
To come back, Pete.
Absolutely. Great conversation. Really okay. Helpful. Ross Eisenbray, everybody. And go to epi.org and follow them on Twitter. What is their Twitter handle, by the way? I know I follow them. I get the tweets, but I'll find that out when we come back from the Associated Press update as well as our broadcast.
Politics of the United States for the people of the United States. This is POTUS, Sirius XM 124.